This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Except for those in the book business, the annual presentation of the National Book Awards is a relative non-event compared to, say, the Oscars or the Emmys or even the daytime Emmys. This evening's ceremonies in New York City don't figure to be much different. There are a couple of controversies, as always. The nomination of the 9/11 Commission report is in the nonfiction category. That came as a surprise. The book was a surprise bestseller, too. But the biggest argument is over the shortlist for best fiction. The nominees are five relatively unknown writers, all women, all from New York, all with sales totals in the low thousands. So is the purpose of the award to honor what judges think the best books are, or to promote the industry in general and the winners in particular? Do you care who wins or loses? Later in the program, Anthony Shadid of The Washington Post will join us from Baghdad. But first, book awards. Do literary prizes influence what you read? Which ones do you pay attention to? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And we begin with Laura Miller, a book critic for the online magazine Salon. Good to speak with you again.
Great to be here.
And I have to ask, the comparison everybody draws is to the Booker Prize in Britain, which is a huge deal over there, vastly important, carried live on television. Why aren't the National Book Awards in any way equivalent?
Well, partly it's because England is a smaller country, so there's a lot more concentration of the culture within a smaller space. I mean, that sounds perverse in a way, but it really does make a difference. The fact that Americans are so far apart from each other and regional differences are so pronounced really keeps Americans from having the kind of shared literary culture that the Brits have.
Well, they've opened it to writers from South Africa, Canada, almost everywhere else in the world.
Well, they also have a much more readerly culture. People read more there, and that's what I'm talking about. It's not so much that the writers are from the same place as that the people who read books see each other more and talk to each other more, and it's more of a mass culture thing. Although, of course, it's not actually a mass culture thing. Which, even in Britain.
But one of the things the Booker Prize does, for example, is award a substantial amount of money, which makes a lot of the press pay attention to it.
That's true, but I think they do a couple of other things as well. One of the things that they do is allow their judges to speak to the press during the period when the books are being judged. So there's kind of a tradition in England of the judges grousing or tipping off the public in some way. And so there tends to be a lot of press coverage leading up to the awards, and it builds a certain amount of suspense.
Okay. Well, how big a deal are the National Book Awards in this country?
Well, I think they could be a bigger deal than they are, but they aren't so much, despite the best efforts of the National Book Foundation, who presents the awards, for a variety of reasons. They're helpful when the books come out in paperback and you can put a sticker on the cover that says, "This won the National Book Award." I think everyone believes that that has helped sell books, but not perhaps as well as the Pulitzer Prize does.
And there's another big prize, the Pen Faulkner Award.
Well, I don't know if I would call that one quite so big. I mean, you can still put a sticker on the cover of a book saying it won the Pen Faulkner Award, but it's not quite as prominent. It doesn't get reported in the newspapers quite as visibly.
There's also, for children's books, the Caldecott Award.
Yes, the Caldecott and the Newbery are two awards that have an incredible influence on the children's book market, partly because they're books that are associated with children's librarians. I mean, there are awards that are associated with children's librarians, and children's librarians play a far more significant role in getting people to read particular books than adult librarians do.
Now, is the NBA, the National Book Awards, is that at all concerned with the idea of becoming the industry's Oscars, of promoting this into a big-time event? And is that part of the debate that we're hearing this year about the relative obscurity of the fiction finalists?
Well, I think that the book awards have been well shepherded in the past few years by organizers who have really tried to make them the Oscars of the book business. They have a big gala party where they, it's a black tie banquet where they give the awards in Times Square, and they really make every effort to make it a big deal. But I think that the actual books that are lined up to win the awards kind of usually tend to work against that impulse.
Because one of the things you have at the Oscars is the stars of all of those nominated movies, and in some respects, the people who are nominated this year aren't exactly literary stars.
No, I don't. I mean, there are some very good writers, but none of them are writers who tend to turn heads in even a group of very well-read people.
And there aren't all that many writers who will make people turn their heads, but some
exactly.
will. Exactly. Let's get some callers on the line. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. We'll begin with Anthony. He's calling from Troy, Ohio.
Hi. I would like to know if your guest has an opinion about the quality of the nominees for this year's National Book Award, and then I have a comment about Children's Book Award.
Okay, well, Laura Miller, do you have a comment about the quality of the nominees this year?
Well, the only particular prize for which I've read all of the nominees is the fiction prize. And while I think that the shortlist is of a generally higher quality this year than it was last year, only two of the books on the list seem to me to be really exceptional. And at the same time, I'd have to say that I'm not sure that I think either of those two wonderful, really, really fine books as they are, is really the right kind of book for the National Book Awards, given what I think the goal of the awards is.
Meaning you're saying that if somebody then goes and if one of these books should win and goes and buys it on the basis of winner of the National Book Award on the cover, they may be disappointed.
They might be, particularly if they're not somebody who reads a lot of books and if they're not a writer. The strengths of these books are very literary. They have a lot to do with being very familiar with literary fiction, with its conventions. They're not exactly experimental, but the effects that they're reaching for are not what the sort of average reader is looking for in even a literary title.
So are the judges writers themselves?
Well, that's part of the problem. I think that the book awards have the problem that they want to be an award that's national, that speaks to all American readers, but the awards are chosen, for example, for the fiction awards by other fiction writers, and they tend to have very different standards from what, say, my sister, who I always use as an example. I always say, this is not a book I can give to my sister. My sister's not a writer. She's a nurse, and she wants a book with a good story, and these are books that have beautiful sentences but not really strong stories.
Anthony, we haven't forgotten about you.
I also wanted to get the guest's opinion about children's books because I have to concede that I am greatly influenced because of a lot of things going on in my life as to what books to select for my children, and I can say that the books that I have selected have, I can't recall the name of the awards, but many of the books, I think the Polar Express, for example, that's now been recently made into a movie, is one of them. And I've been impressed with the creativity and the thoughtfulness that goes into the writing of many of these books. And I wanted to know what your guest thought about Children's Book Award winner.
Anthony, I'm going to stop this because she talked about it a few minutes ago when you were in a hold and may have missed it, and I apologize for that. The Caldecott and Newbery Awards, she said, are paid attention to by a great many people in children's books, particularly children's librarians who are very influential on this. So we're going to move on with that, Anthony.
But thank you.
Thank you. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Rachel. Rachel's calling from El Cerrito, California.
Hello. I have a question and a comment. My comment is that I always buy the National Book Award fiction winners. I see that little sticker, and I am one of those who respond to it. I understand some of the concerns about this year's finalists, and what I'm curious about is I purchased Julia Glass's The Three Junes, having heard nothing about it, but seeing the National Book Award winner sticker on it, I bought it. And it was one of the best reads that I'd had in a long time. And what I'm curious is, before that sticker went on that book, were its sales poor, or it was her first-time novel? Mm-hmm. So it's not that a lot of people had a lot of history with her to base their purchase on. And I'm wondering if this issue of selling few copies is a bit of a red herring if it's a first-time offer or, those sales will be different once that sticker goes on it.
Great. Go ahead, Laura Miller.
Well, I agree that I don't really think that the number of sales that a book has had so far should have that much of an influence on whether it's nominated. That's not really my concern with expressing my reservations about this year's list. And I think that books like Three Junes are a great example of how the National Book Award can help a book that is connect with an audience that might not otherwise find it. I have a feeling that if your caller were to pick up any one of these five books, I would think the odds are that she's not going to feel like it was a good read. She might feel like there were some good things about it, but she might feel unsatisfied because it's not the kind of really great storytelling that most people are looking for in a book, in a novel.
Rachel, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And Laura Miller, I wanted to thank you for your time today.
You're welcome.
Laura Miller, by the way, are you going to the awards tonight?
I actually was thinking about it, but I think I'm coming down with a cold, so I might stay home and watch TV instead.
It isn't on TV.
I know. I'll have to watch Lost instead.
Laura Miller, a book critic for Salon.com. She joined us from our bureau in New York again. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
It's no surprise that publishers and bookstores pay attention to these prizes, though. Here to tell us what's at stake for the book industry is Charlotte Abbott, an editor for Publishers Weekly. She's also with us from NPR's bureau in New York City. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So are you going to the prizes to the award ceremony tonight?
I am.
Well, I'm glad somebody's going. I hate to think that nobody was going to be there. To what extent will tonight's awards translate into dollars for either the publishers of these books or the stores that sell them?
Well, it's always a bit of a crapshoot. I think publishers have expressed some disgruntlement with the awards for a while. In the last 5 years, there really has only been one book that went on to enormous success, which was Jonathan Franzen's The Corrections. And again, like Laura mentioned a little earlier in the hour, there was a lot of build-up to that. There was a lot of controversy over the book around the Jonathan Franzen's appearance on Oprah, which led to this sense of sort of anticipation and excitement when he was nominated.
For those who missed it, he didn't want to be seen as being too middle-brow, perhaps, to be on Oprah. But go ahead.
Exactly. And that incited a lot of controversy in the literary community, and then it became a much larger issue, sort of in the culture. You know, other media was sort of catching on. It wasn't just book media that was focused on this. But without a sort of enabling narrative, the National Book Award doesn't always attract a lot of media attention, and therefore doesn't always drive a lot of sales because a lot of people don't hear about the winners.
Now, in a field, for example, poetry, which does not generate a lot of sales to begin with, I assume to win the National Book Award makes you a real good, solid candidate to sell a lot of poetry books, but only in terms of poetry books.
It's always on a relative scale. So what is great sales for poetry would be negligible sales for a novel.
And even good sales for a novel, they tend to get dwarfed by nonfiction these days.
It depends on the title.
So they're all competing one for in different fields, in other words.
But that's definitely true.
Okay. Stay with us. If you want to get in on the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're talking about the National Book Awards, which are presented this evening in New York City. Do you care? 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conner. We'll be back after a short break. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're discussing book awards. The winners of the National Book Awards will be announced tonight in New York City. As usual, the nominees have gotten people to talking about the purpose and influence of book awards. and books, too. Our guest is Charlotte Abbott, an editor of Book News for Publishers Weekly. She's with us from NPR's Bureau in New York City. Of course, you're invited to join us. What book awards do you pay attention to, if any? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get another caller on the line. Brian is calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi, my name's Brian Harris. I'm a writer from Louisville, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a wonderful thing that they're picking some authors that are off the beaten track. Because typically, I mean, the books they pick are only useful to English professors and people in the publishing industry. And as an example of that, I've got a copy of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon. It won the Pulitzer. It was a finalist for the National Book Award and the Penn Faulkner Award. And, I mean, it's so dry and clunky. I'm on page 100, and I can barely choke it down. And he uses the kind of turns of phrase that are only useful to English teachers. Then you take a guy like Chuck Palahniuk, whose entire canon is so socially relevant and plot-driven. And where is his book award? He wouldn't even have a career, except they made Fight Club into a movie, which was probably the least of his books.
So you're glad the establishment is being tweaked?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great thing.
Well, Charlotte Abbott?
I would agree with you. I think that there's a certain amount of in-the-box thinking that goes into these awards, and a lot of times we see likely candidates come up, names that have, that are critical darlings or who've built a certain literary reputation. But as Laura pointed out earlier, the scale doesn't always tip at these awards in the direction of the kind of reader-friendly qualities that you're looking for.
So, Brian, if you had a nominee to make this year, what would it have been? Your own work excluded, please.
You know what? A book that I really enjoyed that I think a lot of people would dismiss as being populist was Odd Thomas by Dean Koontz. I mean, it's just this wonderful little work of outsider fiction. I mean, it's really plot-driven. It's well-written from beginning to end. I think it's a great book. I mean, it doesn't use dry turns of phrase to describe outdated modes of thinking. But, I mean, I think it's a wonderful book nonetheless.
Okay, Brian, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
The judges of these prizes play a significant, if somewhat hidden, role in the awards process. Tom McGuane was a judge for the fiction category of the National Book Awards in 1995. Of course, he's an acclaimed novelist himself. He's with us now by phone from his home in McLeod, Montana. And it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me back.
So remind us, who won that year when you were the judge?
Philip Roth won for Sabbath Theater, a controversial book itself.
Mr. Roth is controversial again this year for, some say, being snubbed.
I don't think he's been snubbed. I think if I were the czar of the National Book Awards, he would be on that short list. So would Cynthia Ozick and other people. But it doesn't really matter who I think should be on there. We're always going to have reservations about that. My problem, really, with the National Book Awards, the system is tough. The publishers have much too large a role in it. The British publishers, for example, are limited to the number of books that they could submit to the National Book Awards, their version of the National Book Awards, the Man Booker and so on.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, any publisher can submit any number of books for recognition, and these poor five judges can't possibly read the volume of material that they're given every year. It's, I mean, kind of sort of, it's an insider's joke. And since they can't read all the books or even all the worthy books, they become vulnerable to publishing propaganda as well as their own prejudices.
Well, wouldn't publishing propaganda tend to, just in reference to our last caller, aid Dean Koontz and Odd Thomas as opposed to some of the people who ended up on the book or on the fiction shortlist this year?
Well, that may be the case, but that would be a credibility issue, I think. But I think you can be assured that probably that book was submitted, given the importance, the economic importance of that writer to his publisher. But the main thing is that the judges cannot possibly read the amount of books they're asked to read. That's a problem. I mean, it's a basic problem, and it really needs to be solved. There should either be some sort of screening committee, hopefully democratically selected from across the nation, so that it wouldn't have this Northeast ballast year after year.
Mm-hmm.
although the writers I would have added to this short list both live in the New York area. Secondly, it should be winnowed down to a size that the judges can be expected to read carefully and judge in good conscience. That's not possible now.
Wouldn't it also be a bigger event if the event were bigger? If, for example, Tom McGuane was going to be there tonight?
Well, I wouldn't make it much bigger. I think it's quite big now, and maybe the attempt to sort of Hollywoodize it, which we have seen making a sort of a book people's Academy Awards, is not exactly the way this should happen. But it is quite big, and I think I'm delighted to see all this excitement about the Fiction Awards this year. This is, after all, a sign that people are caring about what happens. And in the long run, I can't help but think that this will help things. But I would agree, as I usually do, with Laura Miller, that these kinds of books, for whatever reason, are getting increasingly marginal. Even though they're, without a doubt, all excellent books, they're not likely to make their deal with readers so much as with prize committees and universities and grant and aid committees and so on. And it seems to me that the reader is kind of less part of this equation than it used to be, and that worries me. And I'm sure it has to do with storytelling. I remember Laura Miller saying that before she reads a contemporary collection of short stories, she wants to grab the author by the shoulders and say, "Tell me now, does anything happen?"
Let me read this email that we got from Diane Glasman in Brisbane, California. Yes, increasingly I've learned to avoid National Book Award winners and Pulitzer winners. Almost to a book, I've been disappointed with the quality of the work from both a human and a literary standpoint. These awards rarely go to cutting-edge work. Both seem susceptible to PR efforts by publishers and publishing houses. In addition, both awards virtually ignore genre writing. There are magnificent works being produced in the genres of thrillers and science fiction, challenging works written in beautiful prose, and before the literary establishment turns their nose in the air, remember, both A Christmas Carol and The Turn of the Screw are ghost stories. 1984 and Brave New World are science fiction fantasy, and Edgar Allan Poe wrote horror.
Well, you know, she does have a point, and also I think it's very unlikely a comic novel would win the National Book Award in today's climate. I mean, it's getting to be a sort of morose scene, and I think the audience is on to that. They don't have the expectations they once had for books that win these prizes. The other thing, if I were the National Book Czar, that I would do is what the Best American Short Stories editors and so on do, which is to include Canadians. Canada's just full of good writers right now. And I know we have this, as usual, the stumbling block of the word national, but it would show great generosity by including all North Americans, or as well as people from the rest of the world who publish in the United States. There's a Turkish writer named Orhan Pamuk who published a book this year called Snow that's a fantastically good book published in the United States. I wish that were up for consideration.
Might there be more categories? Best translation, and they have all those sorts of things at the Academy Awards.
Yes, they could do that. But the main thing is they're going to have to control the submission some way. And the simplest way would be to limit the number of books that publishers can submit.
And should it just be writers who are on, for example, the fiction panel?
That's a great question. I've never thought about that. But I think the answer is no, it shouldn't be just writers. Writers generally are such miserable people that might soften it up. The panels can be quite acrimonious generally, and nobody there's rarely real concurrence. I've heard myself saying before that the winner is usually the second choice of three of the five judges.
So that's the way these things get decided. There's no way to get politics both internal and external out of this process, is there?
No. And the National Book Foundation is sort of justifiably proud of the fact that they keep the process so secretive. I think maybe they'd be better off not publishing the finalists so they don't get pre-reviewed before the award. But that's sort of locking the barn after the horse has escaped, because everybody's been reading reviews and we know one another's reputations. The thing gets pretty well cooked down before you ever get the pile of books. But some snap judgments have to be made over an enormous number of titles, some of which might be books that should have won.
Let's get a caller on the line. Sue Ellen is with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling because I agree with the last speaker who talked about making some changes, but I also think that that the book award is, in a way, sort of like the Nobel Prize. We do not see it as in its popularization, and that what it is it advances the craft of fiction rather than being a popularity award, that it is a book that is a beacon to other writers, that it challenges writers, that it, which then filters down.
Are you a writer, Sue Ellen?
I'm not, but I was a communication director for the largest only women writers retreat in the United States until a couple of years ago, and my stepdaughter is a novelist who is in this year's Best New American Voices. So I know a little bit about literary fiction and about the process that writers go through.
I just wanted to pose Sue Ellen's comments to both Charlotte Abbott and Tom McGuain, but also say, where does the reader come into this? Shouldn't it be the books that challenge the reader? But Tom McGuain, you first.
Well, I don't have a thing to answer for that. It's just that I think your caller makes a point that's extremely worthwhile. It's just that when it gets to be a business of creating examples for other writers or sort of breaking artistic ground, it's a little bit like a flywheel with the weight gone because the readers seem to have been. Left out of the equation, and at least in fiction, and especially in the novel, there was always a kind of big sloppy relationship between writers and readers, and that's what kind of kept it evolving along with the culture. And what has happened now is that writing has become a sort of something for analysis. I mean, you know, cutting edge writing is something, and whether or not readers are involved to any degree seems not to matter so much. Now, this is not a vote for, you know, pushing popular fiction more to the center of things. It just means that we can't forget ordinary readers, that is to say, people who read without planning to write a story or a novel themselves.
Yeah. Charlotte Abbott, I wanted to get your remarks on that.
Yeah, I would say the same. I mean, I think that for publishers, a concern is that there are so few focal points in the culture that really, where books are in the spotlight. And there's, you know, an NAA study that came out this year that says that there's, you know, a shrinking number of people who read. And I think some of where the frustration in the industry is coming from is that the National Book Award is not really always successfully putting a spotlight on the books that could fulfill both desires, both to connect readers with work that they are going to love and want to talk about with their friends. So that's a key thing, but also books that you know, progress, sort of push forward, set the bar higher for literary fiction or for writing in general. And I think that there are books out there that do both. I'm just not convinced that the jury panel found them this year.
Sue Ellen, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And Tom McGuain, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure.
Tom McGuain, former judge for the fiction category, the National Book Awards, the author himself of many novels, including most recently The Cadence of Grass. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now we turn to one of this year's National Book Awards finalists for fiction. Sarah Swanyan Bynum was nominated for her novel Madeline is Sleeping. Ms. Bynum is with us by phone from her home in Brooklyn, New York, and congratulations.
Thank you so much, Neil.
We've been talking a lot about this award, and what does it mean to a writer like you to be nominated for a National Book Award?
It's enormously powerful to have it happen. It's such a meaningful vote of confidence from both other writers and from sort of the literary establishment that, you know, even that despite the controversy, it still feels very affirmative and very moving to be honored this way.
Tom McGuain spoke of writers as being a miserable people. I'm not so sure about that, but they do tend to be lonely people working away at their typewriters or word processors. And was this like a bolt of vindication from the blue?
Well, I have to say the greatest gift of this process has been spending time with the four other finalists, in part because we all live in New York and in part because there has been this little tempest that's been stirred up. We've spent a lot of time together in the past few weeks and have done several readings together. And so that loneliness has been assuaged by the company of the four finalists and also the company of their books. It's been such an enormous pleasure to get to read these four novels since the announcement was made.
And after reading them, and obviously you've read your own, do you find a great deal in common amongst them?
You know, to be quite honest, I don't. And this is something that's been puzzling to me, the description of sameness, because they have struck me as being quite singular. One is historical, another is magical. I mean, and we span several centuries, several continents. And the writing styles themselves are quite distinct from one another. But I would say if there's something that we had in common, and another one of the finalists, Christine Scott, put it very beautifully. She described all the five books as aspiring to a certain daring kind of performance. And the only thing that I would add to that is that the performance is daring, but I also think it's deeply felt, and that these are books that are very faithful to certain emotional truths. But other than that, they seem to me to be very eclectic.
Well, we've heard from two people tonight. One is going to the Book Awards there in New York. One isn't. I assume you're going.
Yes, after I get off the phone with you, I'm hopping in the shower.
So it's going to be a pretty big evening.
Oh, yes, it's very exciting. We're pulling out my husband's wedding tuxedo.
Been a while, I suspect.
Yes.
Well, we wish you the very best of luck.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you so much for the chance to be on your show.
Thank you. Swan Yan Bynum is the author of the novel Madeline is Sleeping, which is nominated for the National Book Award tonight in the category of fiction. She was kind enough to join us by phone from her home in Brooklyn, New York. And we just have a second before the break, Charlotte Abbott. How many people will be going to this event at the Marriott Marquis there in Times Square?
Yes, it's in a huge auditorium. Publishers pay $10,000 a table. Many of them take out more than one. And there are just crowds of people. I'd be hard-pressed to put an exact figure on it, but I would guess somewhere between 500 and 750.
Right. Well, stay with us, and we're going to take a couple of more calls after the break on this issue of the National Book Awards. Why aren't they a bigger deal? How big a deal are they? Do you pay any attention to them? And who cares who wins or loses? Do you? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also email us, TOTN@NPR.org. We'll also be talking with Anthony Shadid of the Washington Post, who won the 2004 Pulitzer Prize, speaking of prizes, for his international reporting. He's just returned to Baghdad, so stay tuned for that. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's wrap up our conversation about book awards, their purpose, and their politics. Our guest is Charlotte Abbott, book news editor at Publishers Weekly. And let's get another caller on the line. And this is Lee. Lee's calling from Waco, Texas.
Hi. I'm really just curious to know if the graphic novel format is excluded from the National Book Awards, because, I mean, some of the best books I've read in the last year, like Blankets by Craig Thompson or the nonfiction The Fixer by Joe Sacco, are graphic novels, and they've won Pulitzer Prizes, but I've never seen them win a book award. Are they eligible at all, or are they just being excluded?
I think it's singular Pulitzer Prize. I think that was for Mouse.
Or Spiegelman's Mouse.
Yes.
But still, I mean, it's a step in the right direction.
Well, Charlotte Abbott?
Certainly none have won in the past, and I think it would give publishers and the media a jolt to see one on the list. I mean, there are certainly graphic novels that are fiction and then also nonfiction sort of, you know, historical treatments that are also done in that form. So who knows? It's something that we could see. I don't think it's strictly ruled out. I just think that the judges tend to think in a certain box, and so far that box hasn't included graphic novels.
Or, for that matter, just to go on with an earlier emailer's point, their box doesn't include a lot of genre fiction.
Right, or comic novels, which might even sort of fit more broadly under the rubric that they're using. There are a lot of things, I think, that are just that's not award material.
Well, they're focusing on the smaller things that they think are going to be less noticeable by the majority of book writers, less appreciated by the majority of book readers, who like these New York collections that you've been discussing earlier, mm-hmm. One would think they'd open their mind a little bit more to that kind of thing as well. There's truly exceptional work being done, and I think it gets ignored, and that's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. It's true, and I think there's a certain amount of momentum around this. I think that there's more prominent coverage of more graphic novel writers, and I think it's probably something that we'll see in coming years. That I think you're onto something, and we may see it yet.
Leith, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And let's get to Christy on the line. Christy's in Portland, Oregon.
Hi. I am the program coordinator for the Oregon Book Awards, and we face a lot of the same issues that you have been talking about on the show today.
The same kinds of difference between publishers and writers and different kinds of agendas, that sort of thing?
That sort of thing. We gave the 1998 Fiction Award to Chuck Palahniuk for Fight Club, and that may also have helped to get the attention that he needed to get the movie made. And I wanted to point out, too, this year we had Colson Whitehead as the fiction judge, and he chose four finalists for our novel award, one of which was a mystery novel, one was a suspense thriller, one was a historical fiction novel, and only one was a literary fiction novel, which I thought was interesting.
Which one?
Tracy Doherty's book, Axeman's Jazz. It's a Methodist. Oh, shoot, I can't remember the publisher. It's in Texas. Sorry. But it's not a well-known book, but the Oregon Book Awards helps to, you know, kind of raise the awareness of books from Oregonians.
And I guess Charlotte Abbott, what Christie's talking about in Portland, is just writ large there in New York.
Yes.
I mean, you have all these different competing interests, and it seems that this year the interests of, gee, this is a wonderful little book, let's throw what little publicity we can on this, and it happened five times in fiction.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if everyone shares, you know, the opinion that Laura Miller expressed earlier. I mean, once the book has become more widely read, you know, there is a history of these of National Book Award winners picking up sales in paperback. Some do a lot better than others. I mentioned Jonathan Franzen's The Corrections, which sold over a million copies. One of your callers mentioned Three Junes by Julia Glass, which she was a first novelist. And that book sold over 700,000 copies in paper.
Cold Harbor did awfully well. Cold Harbor?
Do you mean Cold Mountain?
Cold Mountain, excuse me. Cold
yes,
Harbor.
And that was actually a bit of a phenomenon before it won the award. So there have been the odd book that really touched a nerve, and I think until, you know, readers are able to kind of sink their teeth into this book, you know, we can only be fair by giving them the benefit of the doubt and seeing whether word of mouth catches on.
Christy, thanks for the phone call.
Okay, thank you.
And good luck and have a good time at the awards tonight, Charlotte Abbott.
Thank you.
Charlotte Abbott is book news editor for Publishers Weekly. She spoke with us from NPR's Bureau in New York City.